Welcome to Uncle Nene's Nerdcast. I am your host, Nathan Fletcher, a.k.a. Uncle Nene. We have a great show for you today. One of my favorite shows is relatively new. Apple TV, if you're not subscribing, you should subscribe. If you love science fiction, they have amazing shows. Three that I love are Foundation, Silo, Dark Matter, great. But above those, high above those, is the show Severance. It's really incredible. Great show all around, great writing, directing, photography, everything, wonderful acting, and just different. It's wonderful to see somebody take a risk on doing something different that has never been done before. So my guest today is kind of an expert on Severance. He loves it even more than me. Welcome to the show, Ryan Sullivan.
Thank you, Nathan. It is great to be here. Thanks for coming. Looking forward to talking Severance with you.
Yeah, we have talked a lot about it off camera. Now we get to talk about it on camera, so it'll be fun.
Yes.
So first, let me set up kind of the show for the viewers. There will be spoilers, so if you don't want to be spoiled, then don't watch this episode. We're going to dig in deep to it. It is a dystopian sci-fi meets dark workplace satire, very unique and different. The tone is just unique. We're going to get into kind of the identity corporate dystopia thing, and then we're going to get into, you know, production design, cinematic style. That also makes it unique. And then the narrative structure and the storytelling, we're going to talk about all that. I think a good way for us to start is I'm going to play the season one recap. And I think that's going to get us in the zone. It's a couple minutes long, but I'm sure you're going to enjoy watching it as much as I do. Here you go.
My name is Mark S., and I have, of my own free accord,
elected to undergo the procedure
known as severance.
Awesome.
I give consent to sever my memories between my work life and my personal life.
So that version of you is trapped there.
I confer upon you the advanced role of department chief. A handshake is available upon request.
Thank you. May I have a handshake?
Why won't they tell us what we're doing here?
It's important work, obviously.
You have earned a 5-minute music dance experience.
The maraca. Excellent choice.
How many departments are there?
Probably
around
30.
Five.
No one's quite sure.
Am I dead?
No.
This isn't like hell or something?
No.
Do I have a family?
I don't know.
Nothing is what they say. If you want to know what's going on down there, you'll find the beginning of a very long answer.
There is a lot unknown.
Not knowing is probably for the best.
The surest way to tame a prisoner is to let him believe he's free.
They can wake us up on the outside.
Daddy!
I saw my son. Now I'm just supposed to have that in my head every day here.
I took a separate job because it sounds freaking awesome. So no, I don't think severance divides us. I think it brings us together.
Let's burn this place to the ground.
Your orientation's been so much fun.
All right, a lot to digest there for sure. So Ryan, tell me, you know, your first thoughts when you came across the show. I'd like to know kind of, you know, your first impression. What did you think the show was when you started, and did it end up being what you thought, or what did it end up being something different?
Look, I'm going to be really honest with you. My wife and I probably first watched the show in, I was trying to think about it, probably February, March of 2022, and really tuned in for Adam Scott because we really liked him on Parks and Rec. And I think I read a little something online like, hey, it's workplace, but everything is not quite what it seems. Usually when we finish a season of a show, we're looking for something new. So we really just said, hey, let's kind of give this a whirl. Well, and, you know, we normally say like we'll watch the first episode or two and then we'll decide if we like it or not. Immediately liked it. Immediately saw that it was something special. The care in every shot, the care with the color palette, the care with the sets, with the storytelling. I love the whole mid-century modern aesthetic. So just all of those things combined, and then with really great acting with Adam Scott, with Britt Lauer, with you know, John Turturro's in it, and Christopher Walken's in it. And so, you know, everybody loves all those actors. So I didn't really still know what the show was about, but was hooked. And was like, okay, I need to watch more of this.
Yes, absolutely. I had a similar experience. It was awful that they made us wait 3 years between seasons, but I hear that's not going to happen this time. So that's good. So just kind of about the central premise of work-life balance taken to an extreme, obviously the kind of is a brutal satire on American corporate structure. It's kind of, you know, like the if you took a typical corporate company and then turned the volume up to 20 on everything, it kind of takes that. You know, what struck you about that sort of how it kind of sends up, you know, corporate company and corporate structure and corporate bureaucracy, the endless bureaucracy, the loss of personal time, all of that. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Sure. Well, look, I worked at a company for a year that was very much like Lumen Industries in terms of, and I have an old colleague that I work with. It's a gal, her name is Emily. And I said, hey, you need to watch Severance. Have you watched Severance? She said, no, it's on our list. And then once you started watching it, I'm like, isn't this like an EDMC where we worked? And she said, well, kind of. And then like, as I started explaining things more, she's like, no, it really is. And even with its like corporate jargon, the term is, we were sales, basically we were phone sales for an online college. And like when we started, we had to get to this classroom, and it was the confirmed need. The confirmed need is like the UUR, you know? So, and it was like, they were very stingy with the rewards. Like every quarter you got a potluck that you actually had to provide the food for, of course, pizza parties. So look, I think it does a really good job of, like you said, dialing it up to, you know, 20 or 100 or whatever that is. If you've ever worked the soul crushing cubicle job, and this was, you know, that EDMC company was totally cubicle farms. You had to dress a certain way, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's like, man, I've been there. So then it makes you think as a person, well, would I want to be severed? And I almost felt to keep going with the story, I almost felt kind of severed there because Layla and I were newly married. My wife and I were newly married. And I didn't like every once in a while I'd go out with the guys after work. I didn't bring her. I didn't want her like involved, like, because I didn't like it so much that I didn't want her involved. So I didn't want my personal life mixing with my business life. So, you know, in a way, I kind of severed myself, right? I hated it. So I would just like, you know, my time off, I was thinking about how I had to go back there. And, you know, so it's in a way, if you've worked that job, this show will really play to you because you will start to think, man, would I have wanted to be severed? Would that have been a good thing? Well, that, you know, because I didn't want to think about work, or, you know, vice versa when I'm out at work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The other thing that the show really digs into is consciousness and what is that. I hadn't really thought about it from when I understood the premise of the show. Okay, so Audi guy doesn't remember what any guy does. Any guy doesn't remember what Audi guy does. Got it. But what I didn't think of was like, what is the soul or the spirit or the consciousness of this new person that has kind of been created from nothing? And and I couldn't remember, does the any remember anything prior at all from childhood or anything at all, or they're completely from white clean slate?
Right. They're completely from white clean slate. And that's why when in the first episode, when Helly lands on the conference table, it's really going through that. Like, we haven't seen the characters of Mark S. and Irv and Dylan go through that, but we see Helly go through that. So she is like, you know, a newborn baby deer in the woods. She has no idea what's going on.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. And so I think that the writers really started to think about it between season one and season two, because season two explores that a lot more of like,
this
Innie is its own person. It is not really connected to the Audi.
Yeah.
And that's something even, you know, and I don't want to jump too far ahead of our conversation, but at the end of season two, Mark makes a certain choice. And, you know, my wife was baffled and I'm just like, no, but he's like a completely different person that has no contact with her. Right. So for him, he wants to go with the love of his life, which is Helly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a really good point to bring up, as this consciousness aspect of it. And you are really, they are new people in a way.
Yeah.
Something else that we, you know, you hit on in the first question I didn't really address. It is a dark comedy. The show is actually funny.
Oh, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. Yeah.
Correct. That once again plays into that workplace stuff of absurd corporate nonsense. And I think the trailer did a really good job of that between seasons of like, would you like a handshake?
Yeah.
And I would like a handshake. And then one is not offered. And it's just the absurdity of the corporate life can be very, you know, in a strictly controlled corporate environment, they really milk. Sometimes the show is fairly serious and it plods along, and that's very deliberate. So sometimes these are kind of even missed. But when you think about them, you know, sometimes I just laugh. But sometimes when you think about them later, it's like, oh, that was actually kind of funny. So I think it's good writing
too. I think it's the true mark of a good storyteller when you can be incredibly hilarious one moment and then deadly serious the next moment. And it doesn't feel wrong. It doesn't feel forced or anything. I do want to play this clip because it's one of my favorite, is the jazz dance scene, I'm sure. But you know, talk about a perfect blend of, you know, funny. And then I won't show the end of the scene, but it's a great scene.
Whoa, wow. Okay.
You got it.
I love that. It's so great because it's just such a, you could see something very similar to that happening at any corporate, it's, you know, at any corporation where it's like, we're going to mandate fun time. This is fun time. What would you like? You know, 1 minute, 5 minutes of jazz dance, you know?
Right. And the corporate guy, Mr. Milchek, he's into it. Right.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, oh, this is the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
You're going to love it. What's surprising about that scene watching it is always like, Helly is the most, at that point in the series, is the most anti being there. And she kind of gets into it. She's like, okay, well, if we're going to have fun, I guess I'm going to have fun.
Yeah.
Mark S., Adam Scott is doing like the white guy dance. You know, I'm just going to dance like the white man I am.
Yeah.
Irv is even less involved. Dylan G is of course mad and he's continued his severance. But yeah, it's funny because it's like, oh, isn't this great?
Yeah.
And if you really think, it's like, no, it's not great. It's not spontaneous. It's not from the heart. It's not from the soul. It's corporate top down. You will have fun now for these next 5 minutes.
Yes. Yes. And then it kind of escalates into, you know, Mr. Milchek getting attacked.
Yeah.
And it goes, you know, from funny to horrible very quickly. You know,
quickly. I think,
and that's a good show when you can do that. Let's talk about the production design and cinematic style. You and I both have a background in production, and so I'm sure you were equally impressed with everything. I think one of the things that's incredible, and I don't know if maybe you know why they did this, but they definitely intentionally did all of the production design where it was not a specific timeline. You could not, or time period, you could not establish, was it 80s, 90s, 2000s? When did this happen? It seems like it's got a mid-century modern, but not everything. There's like hand phones in some places. It's very strange. You know, do you recall any reason why that was done intentionally, or was it just meant to be just unsettling because of that?
Yeah, I think, look, if I were to guess, because I've listened to, I am a pretty big Severance fan. I'm not a crazy Severance fan.
Right,
I just want to make that clear. Ben Stiller and Adam Scott have a pretty good podcast about the show that they're doing. It's the official podcast for the show, right? So he's been asked, or he's kind of addressed it on that show, and he's like not answered. So I think that, you know, he's acknowledging that it exists, of course, in the show. The cars are slightly different years. They're a little bit older.
Yeah.
And all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's really to make the show have a little bit of a timeless appeal, right?
Right.
Did it take place in the late 90s? Did it take place in the mid 2000s? Is it taking place now? Well,
yeah.
we don't really know. I mean,
right. Yeah.
Gotham, which is another really neat show, a different spin on the whole Batman take, they do that as well. The technology is kind of all over the place. The cars are a little older. Like, what time is this really in? So I think that that is a conscious decision to make it feel, at least within the last 30 years or so, somewhat timeless.
Yeah. Yeah. It does give it, you know, that kind of unsettling feel as well, which they do a great job of just making the viewer feel like something is off. It's, yeah. I'm not sure what, but something is not right.
Right. But the amount of care that goes into the costuming, the set design, the color choices are really big.
Yes.
You know, Lumen Industries is very neutral colors. It's either white, it's gray, it's a mottled brown, it's you know, all these things. And then these characters have dashes of color. Helly's in yellow or like a marine blue, or Adam Scott's in the navy. The lighting, very deliberate. If it's cold, stark, if it's warm, like at Mark's sister's house, it's usually warm coloring.
Yeah.
Fireplaces, things like that. Every shot in that show has a plan behind it, a composition of characters. And so that's another thing that made me fall in love with it right away, is before I even kind of knew what was going on, was, wow, every shot in the show is planned and deliberate and beautiful.
Yeah. The, I was just thinking about the, you know, high speed camera, that they shoot all of the identical corridors and the walking, and, you know, the way it symbolizes the character's fragmented consciousness. It's very, like you said, a lot of care. They care about every visual element, and that's not an easy thing to do.
Right.
You know, the,
there, well, and what's interesting too, Nathan, is, you know, when Mark first gets to the sever floor in the beginning of season two, like you're talking about, there's some high speed cameras. There was a lot of green screen used for that when he's running down each corridor for the camera spinning around him. Well planned. You know, if you're just watching it, obviously, and you're more of a quote unquote layperson, you would just think, wow, that looks neat, but you really want to know how it's done. You and I always want to know, find out how it's done. However, then they really actually take care to try to do as many things practically as they can, where it's not a digital trick. So when the actual Severance movement, which you and I have discussed off camera, coming down the elevator, that's a old school Zolly, right?
Yeah.
Hitchcock loved those.
Yep, Hitchcock. Yep.
Yeah. And so, you know, when I was first watching it, I was like, oh, what are they doing there? They're changing lenses, or, and then I thought, no, wait, that's a Zolly. That's exactly what's going on. And there's a really elaborate shot at the end of season two where on a floor you go from people on a computer, right? Some Lumen employees, and they follow this wire down basically to another floor. And that is a practical shot. And yeah. So it's like, okay, that was not digitally done. So once again, they made a choice. Now we're going to do this practically. And just really the care that's going into every shot of that show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it allows for the kind of storytelling to take place when you put that much care in there. You know, there's a scene I wanted to play with that is kind of funny. I think it goes to the way that they start to really develop the characters, and you see the love story between Mark and, the girl, and how they start to flirt and there starts to be this romance. And I think this was probably the scene for me that, like, okay, they're starting to fall for each other. Take a look at this.
If they come back and attack us, I think we should kill Mark.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So they think we're crazy with nothing to lose.
Smart. That's smart.
Like, I'm imagining them rounding a corner and we're all blood-soaked and I'm wearing your face. And they're like, whose face is that? And I'm like, the last person who f***ed with us. And that's just feeling like a really powerful image to me.
Seems like they'd recognize my face. Maybe if you wore it inside out.
Oh, that was great. Great writing, just really smart and funny and sarcastic. And I think that, you know, that was great. What about the kind of romance there as that developed? You know, then later in season two, we find out who she really is. Was that a big twist for you when you find the big reveal on her?
Yeah. And not to get too technical, I hate to correct the host. We do find out at the end of season one that she is an Egan.
That's right.
Yeah. That's
right. That's right. Because you see the flash where she's, you know, at the party and all that.
Yeah. And once again, talking about costuming and everything, great dress at that party. I loved it. My wife loved it. She's beautiful and sequiny, but with the colors of the show still. I think it's neat. You meet Helly R. You know there's something going on because her Audi keeps sending her back down. Helly wants no part of the severed floor, right? And her Audi finally tapes this video message like, you are not ending this. I don't know who you think you are, but you're there.
Yeah.
So she kind of like is like, okay, well, I've got to make do with what I'm seeing here. Mark has been nothing but kind to her. He's been trying to help her. And just watching that, I remember, you know, Dylan, when we first meet him, he is so into the stupid rewards and into all of that. And by the middle of that season, when at the dance scene, when he realizes he has a child, he changes his entire world, right?
Yeah.
They kind of get him back to that in season two by dangling a bigger prize, which is his Audi wife. And so but once again, I think by the end of season two, he realizes it's just a perk. It's just something that they're toying with me with. But to get back to your question, yeah, I think it's neat. It was fun to see that little office romance develop. And then you find out, oh man, she's an Egan, and where is this going to go? And it's, it's still it was a good cliffhanger because it revealed just enough, but it also left you wanting more.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect timing to do the season two trailer because it really kind of sets up, and then we can talk about season two.
Mr. Scout, I know you're still weighing whether to return to Lumen. But the Mark I've come to know is happy.
Hello, is anyone there? Is the board on? It's Mark S. from Macro.
Okay, so we're not in trouble?
I don't think so. Milchick said we're famous.
All of us equally, or one of us is like the star?
Now if you feel that you can't go on.
So what the hell did you guys see up there?
It's not our world up there.
Audi's wife died a few years ago. Except the woman is Miss Casey.
So what are you gonna do?
I gotta get her out of here.
Mark, you're in. He said she's alive.
This is obscene.
I just want to be sure.
Why did you do this? What is this all about?
Do you know something about Gemma?
Mark, there'll be no honeymoon ending for you.
The work will be remembered as one of the greatest moments of this planet.
You don't value them. You fear them.
We fear no one.
I'm tightening the leash.
If we let this happen to Miss Casey, who's gonna step up when it happens to us?
Now. Goodbye, Marcus.
Wait!
My name is Miss Huang. It's my first day here as deputy manager. Mark W?
Why are you a child?
Because of when I was born.
So funny. Such
once again, the trailer does a really good job of working the humor in to that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Look, I think Nathan, the overarching I'm a fan of several shows. Fairly a good fan of Breaking Bad. I loved Mad Men. I'm a fan of Dallas. I'm wearing my South Fork shirt. And Mad Men did this specifically with the character of Betty Draper. In the first season, Betty Draper is a child.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very deliberate, where she's very innocent. She doesn't know what's going on. She doesn't really realize that her husband's cheating on her. And she's just kind of walking through the world in rose-colored glasses.
Right.
In the second season, Betty Draper is a teenager. She has figured out Don is cheating on her. She is not happy. And she's starting to get very bratty and very manipulative, as we all do as teens. That is exactly what happens with all the Severed characters, right?
Interesting.
At the beginning, they are very much like children. They're innocent. They're wide-eyed. Irving is probably the most into the whole mystique of Lumen and Kier, reading the books and whatnot. And by the end, he's like, you know, by the end of season one, they start to make that transition of let's burn this place to the ground.
Yeah.
And so in the second season, they are teenagers. They're rebelling. They're like, this is, and hell, he was like that kind of right from the go, right? But the rest of them are not happy, and there's more to the world, and they realize they're more like prisoners than anything else, and they're just really starting to rebel. And I think that's a big thematic piece between season one and season two of the Innie characters.
That's great. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's very accurate. One of the things, so, you know, at the end of season one, there's a great cliffhanger. They get to experience the outside world. They're outies briefly. And then they get back together. And then, of course, you know, Hallie lies about what she sees because she came to realize, you know, who her outie is. You know, what I thought was remarkable, and we've talked about this, is how Hallie was able to very clearly act like someone very different, like her, without saying a word. You could tell if it was Innie or outie, and you know whether or not she was Egan or not. You know, it, you could tell. You know, does that? Is there ever been another show that you can think of where there was that such of a great same actor, different characters, where it was so obvious just by the way they performed? They didn't have to do clothes or anything else. It was simply her performance. Anything else come to mind like that?
Gosh, in that specific way, Nathan, I think you make a really good point, because I don't think so. Because it's Helena playing Heliar, who's really Helena underneath.
Right.
And so,
yeah, the winter episode when they're out in the cold. Yeah.
Yeah. Woe's Hollow. And leading up to that, when she first comes down to the Severed floor in season two, it's Helena playing Helly.
Right.
Throughout that whole time period. What's really interesting, you and I talked about it off camera. My wife knew right away. She, like, as soon as she came down the elevator and said her first words, my wife went, that's the outie. That's Helena. And I went, what?
Wow.
And she just picked it right away. For many people, and I would have been dumb. I would have not caught it, probably. When a couple episodes later, when it's revealed, But I'm an amateur actor. I do community theater. That level of acting is tough. There are micro expressions, going back and watching some of these clips on actress Britt Lauer's face, that look, when you watch season two again, it will be like, well, how did I not realize this? Because
yeah, when, I've got to watch it again.
Yeah. Once you know, she's doing these little, just tiny playful things at the end of lines or like the subconscious you can see coming through, but it's so subtle that the first time through, so many people miss that, you know. Yeah. And that's acting, and that's very hard to do. And I think that, you know, at the end of the season, at the end of season two, people were heaping accolades on her, and I think they're very well deserved, because that is some damn fine acting.
Yeah, I agree completely. Mm-hmm. You know, in science fiction, the world building piece is really important, and I think with this series, they did such a great job of building that world to where you're taken out of wherever you come from and your place in that world. And everything is so complete. It's compelling, the technology, but it's also very mysterious. You're trying to figure out, well, what is their goal? You know, in every science fiction, the establishment, whether it's the empire or the government or whatever, you're trying to figure out, what is their goal? Is it world domination? Is it power for the sake of power? What's their goal? And in Severance, you're really not clear. What are they after? What are they doing? Why is Gemma special? You know, what did that do for you as you're watching it, you know, and you're thinking that? Did you make any assumptions along the way that were completely wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I thought I had season two cliffhanger figured out. I thought for sure it was going to be Helena was pregnant, because her and Marcus
Right.
had sex twice.
Yeah.
And so he was going to be siring the Egan heir. And I just like, I would have bet cash money on that.
Yeah.
Of course, is very wrong. But look, I think once again, it's just a whole other layer to the show. It's this whole Egan mythology behind just the everyday Lumen stuff. And then who at Lumen is interested in that on the Lumen side, and who is interested in just like, I just want to get my job done the best I can. Like Milchick, right. I think is very much like, he wants to do a really great job and move up. Whereas Cobell was interested because of her upbringing in the whole Egan mythology, and she's praying to a little altar of it in her basement and all that kind of jazz, right? So even within Lumen, you have this split of, hey, I'm just here for a job. I'm going to do a great job. But, and then I'm here for the whole, you know, Egan experience of these people are gods and whatnot. I don't know. Ben Stiller has said he knows how the show ends.
Really? I didn't know that.
He and Dan Erickson, who created the show, the main writer who created the show, they know how the show ends, but they don't know exactly how they're going to get there. So I'm sure if Apple's renewing it for one season at a time or two or whatever, that plays into it. Look, I don't know. They're teasing out these mysterious Egan things. Is it to have the whole world severed? I've talked about this with my wife. It's like when they're putting Miss Casey through Gemma through these torturous ordeals, you know, in a plane crash and writing thank you cards, which is
right.
Sometimes worse than a plane crash. Is it so like in the future, if you have a severed chip in your head, you would just like instantly forget that?
Right.
So it was never a part of your normal timeline consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've thought of different things. Like, is it some type of world domination plot, or is it just that they're trying to perfect the severance process even better? And
yeah.
You know how corporations will make such a huge deal out of something that's really just a minor improvement?
Oh, yeah.
And I think it could just be that everything is just about making a better severance ship, and they're just trying to improve it to where even love won't break through. And we see that when Mark and Gemma are, you know, together, that love still kind of transcends the severance chip. And they're trying to, you know, make the Severance ship so good that even love can't transcend it. And he kind of screws it all up for them. It could just be that's it. Like, that's the goal, because you know how it is, right? You know, Apple will come out with an iPhone and really all that's better is it's a better camera. But they make this huge deal like it's some giant leap forward. It could just be a play on that. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, right. The continuing refinement of the Severance experience. I think you could be right on that.
Yeah. One thing I think is really interesting is the way that Keir Egan is revered as beyond just a corporate founder, but almost like a cult leader. And the way they talk about him is fascinating. I think it's kind of like we take that kind of corporate, you know, structure of, you know, whoever the characters are, you know, of various corporations. But when, you know, especially in Silicon Valley, IT, you know, things like that, they talk about the founder as this super revered genius person. And this kind of turns that volume up to 20, very similar. And they use some language that is very particular to like cults and things like that.
There's a song about the founder that Miss Cobell sings in season one. You know,
that's a
weird song out of nowhere.
Yeah. Isn't that fascinating? I just think it's who would have thought that that was going to work for them to take a founder, but make it kind of like a cult leader. I think that's fascinating.
I think you're 100% right. It's very fascinating. It's very interesting. And then also, you know, one thing it's also showing too, which I think it's showing very well, is like, oh, there's this whole mystique, right? And it's a totally buttoned up organization. It's so professional. It's so this, it's so that. And then it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. And yeah. And I think that is too, when you work in the corporate world, it's like, oh, the big boss is coming down and da, 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 da. And then the big boss is a dope, you know, or whatever. And so I think it does that very well too. It's like they're sloppy behind the scenes. You know, Milchick makes a bad decision with the overtime contingency in season one. Cobell is just freaking out and everything behind the scenes, and she's throwing the crap, you know? So it's like, okay, we're this buttoned up organization, but really behind the scenes, we're as messed up as everybody else. This Keir Egan is not this great legend that we've built him up to be. He was a normal guy, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I think they do a good job of that as well.
Absolutely. So I have a question for you. Any theory on the goats? What's the deal with the goats?
Yeah, what's the deal with the goats? And some fans get really into this, and they've got some really crazy theories out there. Hey, and then some of them might be right.
Yeah.
Look, I think it's partly revealed at the end of season two when they're going to slaughter a goat, which is very biblical, and spill its blood. So there, you know, Mr. Drummond asks, who's another very interesting character, great actor. Who, you know, does it have verve? Does it, you know,
right?
So are they raising 15 goats per the one that's going to get killed at every great new thing, because that one is the very special goat,
right? Is it some kind of ritual? That's interesting for the launch of the new product or chip or whatever. Is it
right?
They've really gone into cult corporate blending together. That's interesting,
right? And so it could just be that we could. Then again, we could find out in season three, there's more to the goats, you know?
Yeah.
Some people think that, you know, the aerial shots of Lumen itself resemble a goat head, or is it a uterus, or there's apparently hidden goat images in Mark's sister and Rickon's house. And so there is definitely a goat aspect. And I don't know if we've seen it. It's a good question, because I don't know if we've seen it entirely played out yet.
That's incredible. You know, I think with Severance, I hope that they don't do it too long. I hope a good 5 seasons is probably it, but we'll see. I hope it doesn't get too, you know, they don't drag it on too long. But I think it's gonna, you know, continue to be interesting. I think for season three, I'm curious, of course, because of the ending of season two, you know, does Gemma actually make it off the property, or does she get pulled back in? I'm curious about Christopher Walken's character, because he seems to have a kind of dark past with Lumen. And so is he going to come back? There's a lot of questions. Any that jump out to you that I wonder that you're like, how is this going to happen? What's going to happen next?
Sure. I mean, it's just, you know, what are Mark and Helly are going to do? They're just running down the hallway right back into
Lumen. Where are
they going? Right. Where are they going? You bring up a very good question with Gemma. Is she going to get sucked back in? Is she going to make it out? What is going on at Lumen? You know, all of those things. I think that, you know, we kind of saw more of the Innie life and the Innie rebellion at Lumen in season two. My guess is, and I could be totally wrong, that we're going to see more of the Audi world in season three and them really trying to get to the bottom of things. Look, I just think with John Turturro and Christopher Walken, I have not read this anywhere or heard about it, but you and I would both know they would, because they're so well known and such great actors, that they're probably getting the two highest salaries in the cast. My feeling is they're paid by the episode. They're not paid by the season. That's why we saw a lot less of Christopher Walken this in season two and John Turturro. I think they will be relegated to maybe an episode or two. And I think it's strictly because of, you know, the show has a certain budget and they've got to take out other things to put in other things. And as the show's gotten bigger beyond the sets, I think that that is just probably a monetary, you know, consideration.
It could be, yeah.
Once again, I could be wrong. There could be in every episode of season three. I don't know. But that's my thought with that. Which is a shame because there are two great actors for a reason and people like to see them. So to have their characters kind of written out will be interesting.
It's kind of a shame that Mr. Drummond died.
Yeah.
He was such a great bad guy, you know, just a great villain. He had that voice and his demeanor was, you know, his presence was just, you know, impressive. And so it's kind of a shame. I assume one of the things that I assume will happen is a new villain will enter the picture. Sure. I feel like there will be a new one. And so I'm always interested, who are they going to cast? You know, what is that character going to bring? That should be interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
The actor that plays Mr. Drummond, I forget his name, pardon me. He is like apparently the most famous and well-known and beloved actor in Iceland.
Yes.
Yeah. And just when you brought up Mr. Drummond's death, I was, you know, kind of reflecting on the show before we talked. And there are two great scenes in the elevator at the end of season two. One, and once again, playing into that dark humor. Once again, Mark S. accidentally shoots Mr. Drummond.
Yes, which was great. That was great. It was an accident. Bam.
Right. Just like because of his severance, body movement, he shoots him. And then the other one is when Miss Casey / Gemma is coming up and down through the elevator layers. Right after that, they're kissing. And I always forget the exact line, so I wrote it down. Because all of a sudden she's a different person. And when she wakes up and she's kissing Mark and she breaks away and she says, "What is taking place?" The most like innocent monotone, you know, what is taking place? And and just two pieces of dark humor in that very tiny elevator set in a very, you know, gripping season finale. Great writing.
Yes, absolutely. That was great. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Ryan. Thanks for doing the show and talking to me about Severance. I'm looking forward to season three. And, you know, I think, you know, for all our viewers, if you haven't watched it, we gave you a lot of spoilers. So you can now definitely tune in, watch it. You know, looking ahead to the next season. Ryan, any closing thoughts?
You know, I was just having dinner with some friends of mine last night and they had not watched. And I said, you really should watch it. And their daughter said, I tried to get through the first episode. It's a little slow. What I try to do, it is slow and pacing. I try to put my phone away and not look at it during the slow moments. Just kind of keep on the story. It is it's my favorite show since Mad Men Breaking Bad, where I want to know everything about it. It is a great show. If you haven't watched it, you know, a lot of spoilers now. But give it a try. Go back and rewatch it if you've seen it, and really try to pick up on things you didn't notice before. My hat's off to Dan Eggerson, the main writer who came up with the whole series creator. And then Ben Stiller, too. He needs a shout out because he's the main showrunner and he's done a tremendous job and he really cares, too, about that show. So there's a lot of love in every shot.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well said. And also hats off to Apple TV for taking a chance on something new. They've been doing it a lot and not a lot of streamers are. So hats off to them as well.
Very true.
Thanks for watching. For y'all at home, make sure you tune in the next episode. We will release an episode every Friday on Uncle Nene's Nerdcast. Thanks for watching.